I mean, does that parallel? You said you had a 300% increase. I guess my question is, how many of how many accounts was 188 in 1981, and of how many accounts is 383 in 1984? Was there an increase in the number of total accounts that weren't NSF that was, or is this an indication of a larger percentage of NSF?
I think of the deadbeats that do it.
Senator Cease, we have seen a growth in our accounts receivable on any type of liability, and also a growth on the non-sufficient fund check liabilities, which are set
up. Are they sort of parallel, or is the non-sufficient one bigger than the other?
The non-sufficient fund check liabilities are far larger than what they are anyway. Trend that we've seen in the growth in the normal accounts receivable.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Howe.
I want to explore one more thing in your collection policies. Have you ever explored taking those small claims that the department has deemed uneconomically to collect and lumping those through those ones in-state to a collection agency?
Senator Houck, we have not. We have looked at that, but at this point, with the means available for offsetting personal income tax and HARP refunds, most of the smaller balance accounts are cleared at that point.
You don't think there's... It does not look feasible at this point, is what you're saying, if you have that vehicle.
We have not gone into it at to any great detail at this time, as far as I'm aware.
It just seems like it's an option you may be able to take advantage of, mm-hmm, if you have the authority to do so.
Well, I think between the two things that we look at is, one is matching up the smaller accounts, because usually if a person has a smaller account, they may have other smaller accounts also, and so when you match those up, then there's usually the dollar tolerance in there, or the dollar amount to be able to work that type of an account. And then also when you look at the other side of if there's any type of a refund that's available, and we do have some billings that go out on these taxpayers, so I think the greater portion of them are matched up that way.
Mr. Chair.
Berlina.
I'm Berlina Crosley from the Department of Revenue. Senator Houck, we cannot use collection agencies currently for in-state accounts.
What I'm trying to determine is there is sufficient economic interest in giving you that kind of authority.
I see.
And if the probing here, I'm basically saying that they have other, or I'm hearing him say that they have other mechanisms that they're using, so the authority, even if we give it to you, wouldn't be used at this time, is what I'm trying to find, if we want to even look at it as a committee, Bill, to give you that kind of authority.
Senator, when we've looked at, I used to have the out-of-state collection program when I was in collections, and many times the collection agencies themselves did not want to work an account under $100, and part of that is because of the amount of time that they would spend, just like with us. So they're doing it from a profit mechanism, and they told us point blank that if we assigned small balance accounts to them, they probably wouldn't work them either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I understand all of that.
Okay.
You know, the determination would be the department to use that vehicle. Mm-hmm. They're also, their wage people that work on the claims are a lot less than the states also. But anyway, that's no particular interest to the department. It sure isn't an interest to me, so.
We'll get this to your constituents.
Okay.
We'll go out and get them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Thank you. The cost, I remember when we dealt with the issue of them using collection agencies for out of state here a couple sessions back, and the feeling was at that time that when they got people within the confines of the state of Oregon, they can get them. If they, you know, ultimately they're going to get them one way or the other, but so it doesn't pay to use expensive collection agencies who usually charge 50% or so. in those instances, but it did pay, certainly did pay out of state, and that's why we gave them the authority back then to use collection agencies out of state. They didn't ask for the authority to use them in state and aren't mm-hmm. asking, and I guess they're telling you they don't want to ask.
I don't know.
Okay, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. The third segment of this bill gives distraint warrant authority on gift and inheritance liabilities, plus it streamlines the administrative process in this program. The current process is that if a gift and inheritance liability is being worked and the taxpayer refuses to make voluntary payment, at this time then the file is referred to an attorney at the Department of Justice who files a petition in tax court to obtain a judgment. And this petition must be filed within 6 years from the date of the assessment. And this process is a costly, time-consuming process and slows down the collection cycle. Under this bill, we would be permitted to file and record a distraint warrant when the taxpayer refuses to pay voluntarily. And this would be the same type of process that we have in the personal income tax program, the withholding program, and most of the other tax programs which are administered by the department. It would also, under the bill, delete the 6-year statute of limitations, which currently, as written, if the account is not collected within 6 years from the date of assessment, then the account outlaws or has to be charged off. And on all of our other tax programs that we administer, there is no statute of limitations. So we're looking at paralleling this to the personal income tax program, the withholding program, and the other programs that the department administers. And again, this would be a minor impact in reviewing the 100 accounts that we have in these programs, as we anticipate that there would be approximately 20 distraint warrants that would be issued per year. And these would be only on situations where we would be forced to force collection from the taxpayer because they wouldn't voluntarily pay the obligation.
Questions? Senator Houck?
Well, let me take the sequence here now. When is the entry time, or how much time after, what is the starting point of the time that you have to file some kind of action against the person that is delinquent?
Okay. Senator,
when is he delinquent is what I should ask. At what point?
Okay, Senator Houck, I think I will defer this to Verlina Crosley. She's prepared a handout, I believe, is in your packet.
Basically, as I understand the question, Senator Howard, you're saying if a gift tax, or excuse me, in this case, an inheritance tax return is filed and not paid, let's say, for example, they file it and just don't pay the money over to the state when they file it, then we go through the same.
Well, I'm trying to find out what point does the clock start.
On the
so you file an inheritance tax mm-hmm. form, mm-hmm. 1 year, and then you've got a year goes by, and then you file a fiduciary report on that estate or whatever. Where does the time start? On the last action, or when the court says the estate is settled, or at what point during that process of settling the estate is the inheritance tax due?
It could be differing times. Normally it's going to be like April 15th, I believe, the year following the date of death for a fiduciary return. I have another person that works in that section that might be better. I can understand the collection process or the appeal process, but the due dates, he might be better. That's Dick Duman, if you'd like to have that.
Well, I just want to know when the clock starts running here.
Okay.
Why don't you come up and put your name on the tape? And
I'm with Richard Dumit, manager of the state audit section of the audit division, the Oregon Department of Revenue. And in answer to your question, Senator Houck, the inheritance tax, let's talk about that a moment, is due 9 months after the death of the decedent.
Okay.
And the tax should be paid with the return. sometimes it is not. In which
but
case,
you understand what happens in that. You know, most estates aren't settled for a couple of years. The inheritance tax you pay at once, you may be drawing money out, or you may be adding to it.
Well, quite often, more often than not, you might say the return is filed showing a tax that is paid at the time they file. Of course, they can get extensions if 9 months is not long enough. But the tax that the personal representative of an estate, let us say, determines to be payable at the time the return is filed, it usually is filed. Usually is paid. The tax we're talking about usually are additional notices of deficiency, which result from audit of the inheritance tax return. And of course, the notice of deficiency goes out in the same manner as the notice of deficiency would for income tax, and then it must be assessed within 1 year of the notice under present law and under the bill also.
All right, let's back it up. Then you got a death. You got 9 months until the tax is due.
The return is due 9 months after the date of death. Yes. The inheritance tax return.
Okay, the return.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long do they, from that point then, how long is it for the taxes to?
To be payable.
Do you pay the tax at the time, or when do you judge it deficient? I'm trying to get at the
limit. Well, we have 3 years after the return is filed to assess it, to send out a notice of deficiency.
Okay, you have 3 years, mm-hmm. but how long does the taxpayer have from the time he files his return till he pays you before you say it's delinquent?
Oh, well, if he files returns within 9 months, let's say he files the return timely, and he pays, and he doesn't pay the tax with the return, let's say, okay, the tax is delinquent, right?
At that point.
Yeah. However, there's no delinquency penalty for that. There's for non-payment. Any delinquency penalty is for late filing of the return under the inheritance tax law.
Okay.
There is interest would accrue, though, at 18% a year or 1.5% a month.
Okay.
And if they don't pay, then we will send out a notice of deficiency. And well, if they don't pay on a self-assessed tax on the inheritance tax return, we will send out a notice of assessment, because a notice of deficiency in that instance would not be necessary.
Okay.
It's only when there is a audit and a deficiency notice goes out, which is in addition to the self-assessed tax on the return, that we would be required to assess within 1 year of the notice of deficiency, in the same manner as income tax. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and the decrease, or you're asking for. What I'm trying to get at is the 6 years clause that
you have now,
and you're asking to decrease that to 2 years. Isn't that what I heard you say?
Well, the 6 years, under present law, after...
You're asking to decrease no statute of limitations.
Well, we're really asking for a change in the method of enforcing collection, is what we're asking for. We're trying to get the method of enforcing collection for inheritance and gift taxes in line with the same method or same procedure as we are in the administration of other taxes that are administered by the Department of Revenue. And so what I'm saying is that the 6 years is the period during which we must file suit in court to enforce the collection of inheritance taxes after the assessment has gone out.
Okay.
And we want to eliminate that cumbersome procedure and put it on a procedure more akin to the manner of collecting income taxes.
And that is that you can file any time ad infinitum? Or?
No. Under the
How long do you have under income tax to file a...
Well, under income tax, the notice of assessment must go out after a notice of deficiency within 1 year.
Okay.
And then any time following 90 days after the notice of assessment, you can transfer the assessment to warrant, and then it can become a lien against real property, and the payment is secured by the lien, see, against real property.
If they have real property.
If they have real property, yeah. Now, with in this bill, instead of going through and filing suit in court to enforce the collection of an assessment, we are seeking to the ability to transfer the assessment to warrant. But there's two periods of time involved here. One in which I'm getting mixed up with the gift tax law. We just want to be able to take the assessment and transfer it to warrant and have the tax secured in that manner, rather than filing a suit in a circuit court.
Okay, but now tell me the significance of filing a security by warrant.
Well, it means that you have to transfer the case to the Justice Department, and they have to file a complaint and have to go through a regular judicial procedure, mm-hmm, to get a judgment from the court for the tax. And of course, the judgment has the force of lien, and it's only then that we have a lien, you see, against, mm-hmm, property.
And the other method?
The other method would be to transfer the delinquency, or the assessed delinquency, to a warrant, and then which would be administratively done and not by court action, in the same manner as it is done for income tax, and then look around for property to place a lien against to secure the payment of tax.
You see, and that's after it's gone through an income tax. It's after it's gone through some hearings and some. So the
appeal procedure is intact here in the same manner as income tax.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cease.
I just might mention that Mr. Dumond and I had a reunion. He used to live in my district, and we once worked together to get a big chunk of our area zoned down to single family from duplex density, which is sort of historic in the city of Portland.
From 825.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't live there anymore.
What was that, the biggest downgrading?
It was the biggest one that there ever had been at that point.
From a business zone to a single family dwelling zone.
Yeah, we were all happy about that at the time. We're both a lot grayer now than we were.
Anything else on this bill?
Mr. Chairperson, we do have amendments that we would like to introduce to this.
Right.
And
I won't say anything. Go ahead.
These amendments are in response to the discussions which Elizabeth Stockdale had with Judge Carl Byers. And one point that we might want to clarify is that when our bills were drafted from the department, they were drafted and printed in December, and Judge Byers did not take office until January. And that's part of the reason why these amendments have been brought forth. The first amendment is on page 3, line 6 of the bill. We would like to delete the word petition and insert the word complaint. And the reason for this is this conforms to the general instructions of how a taxpayer can get their case into tax court. The correct wording is complaint. On page 3, line 7, we would like to delete the word suit and insert the word action, as all references to suits are now being removed from the statutes and changed to action. On page 3, line 16, after deficiency, we would like to insert, or that the deficiency is less than that determined by the Department of Revenue. And the reason for this change is that the old language implies that the tax court can only find if there's a deficiency or if there's not, nothing in the middle. So if they want to compromise it, or if there's been any type of a payment, that the tax court would not have any authority to rule that.
Questions from the committee on the amendments? Okay. Let's keep the judge happy, Elizabeth happy, keep you happy.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe I received a copy of the amendments.
Here.
Thank you.
Anything further on Senate Bill 181? Okay, thank you very much. Close the hearing on Senate Bill 181. Anything further to come before the committee? Be in work session tomorrow on Senate Bill 180, 181, and 178. Okay, we're adjourned.